Chapter 22. Make him leap over a gap of 7 blank years. 10 years more must likewise be granted to us before we are at liberty to resume our history. During that period, Master Thomas Billings had been under the especial care of his mother, and, as may be imagined, he rather increased than diminished the accomplishments for which he had been remarkable while under the roof of his foster father. And with this advantage, that while at the blacksmith's, and only 3 or 4 years of age, his virtues were necessarily appreciated only in his family circle, and among those few acquaintances of his own time of life whom a youth of 3 can be expected to meet in the alleys, or over the gutters of a small country hamlet, in his mother's residence, his circle extended with his own growth, and he began to give proofs of those powers, of which in infancy there had been only encouraging indications. Thus it was nowise remarkable that a child of 4 years should not know his letters, and should have had a great disinclination to learn them. But when a young man of 15 showed the same creditable ignorance, the same undeviating dislike, it was easy to see that he possessed much resolution and perseverance. When it was remarked too, that, in case of any difference, he not only beat the usher, but by no means disdained to torment and bully the very smallest boys of the school, it was easy to see that his mind was comprehensive and careful, as well as courageous and grasping. As it was said of the Duke of Wellington, in the peninsula, that he had a thought for everybody from Lord Hill to the smallest drummer in the army. In like manner Tom Billings bestowed his attention on high and low, but in the shape of blows. He would fight the strongest, and kick the smallest, and was always at work with one or the other. At 13, when he was removed from the establishment whither he had been sent, he was the cock of the school out of doors, and the very last boy in. He used to let the little boys and newcomers pass him by and laugh, but he always belabored them unmercifully afterwards. And then it was, he said, his turn to laugh. With such a pugnacious turn, Tom Billings ought to have been made a soldier and might have died a marshal. But, by an unlucky ordinance of fate, he was made a tailor, and died a never mind what for the present. Suffice it to say, that he was suddenly cut off, at a very early period of his existence, by a disease which has exercised considerable ravages among the British youth. By consulting the authority above mentioned, we find that Hayes did not confine himself to the profession of a carpenter, or remain long established in the country, but was induced, by the eager spirit of Mrs. Catherine most probably, to try his fortune in the metropolis, where he lived, flourished, and died. Oxford Road, St. Giles, and Tottenham Court were, at various periods of his residence in town, inhabited by him. At one place he carried on the business of greengrocer and small coalman. In another, he was carpenter, undertaker, and lender of money to the poor. Finally, he was a lodging housekeeper in the Oxford or Tyburn Road, but continued to exercise the last named charitable profession. Lending as he did upon pledges, and carrying on a pretty large trade, it was not for him, of course, to inquire into the pedigree of all the pieces of plate, the bales of cloth, swords, watches, wigs, shoe buckles, etc. that were confided by his friends to his keeping, but it is clear that his friends had the requisite confidence in him, and that he enjoyed the esteem of a class of characters who still live in history, and are admired unto this very day. The mind loves to think that, perhaps, in Mr. Hayes's back parlor the gallant Turpin might have hob and nobbed with Mrs. Catherine. That here, perhaps, the noble shepherd might have cracked his joke, or quaffed his pint of rum. Who knows but that Macheath and Paul Clifford may have crossed legs under Hayes's dinner table. But why pause to speculate on things that might have been? Why desert reality for fond imagination, or call up from their honored graves the sacred dead? I know not. And yet, in sooth, I can never pass Cumberland Gate without a sigh, as I think of the gallant cavaliers who traversed that road in old time. Pious priests accompanied their triumphs. Their chariots were surrounded by hosts of glittering javelin men. As the slave at the car of the Roman conqueror shouted, "Remember thou art mortal," before the eyes of the British warrior wrote the undertaker and his coffin, telling him that he too must die. Mark well the spot. 100 years ago, Albion Street, where comic power dwelt, Malaysia's darling son, Albion Street was a desert. The square of Connaught was without its penultimate, and, strictly speaking, not. The Edgware Road was then a road, 'tis true, with tinkling wagons passing now and then, and fragrant walls of snowy hawthorn blossoms. The plowman whistled over Nutford Plus. Down the green solitudes of Sovereign Street the merry milkmaid led the lowing kine. Here, then, in the midst of green fields, and sweet air before ever omnibuses were, and when pineapple turnpike and terrace were alike unknown, here stood Tyburn. And on the road towards it, perhaps to enjoy the prospect, stood, in the year 1725, the habitation of Mr. John Hayes. One fine morning in the year 1725, Mrs. Hayes, who had been abroad in her best hat and riding hood, Mr. Hayes, who for a wonder had accompanied her, and Mrs. Springett, a lodger, who for a remuneration had the honor of sharing Mrs. Hayes's friendship and table, all returned, smiling and rosy, at about 10:30 from a walk which they had taken to Bayswater. Many thousands of people were likewise seen flocking down the Oxford Road, and you would rather have thought, from the smartness of their appearance, and the pleasure depicted in their countenances, that they were just issuing from a sermon, than quitting the ceremony which they had been to attend. The fact is, that they had just been to see a gentleman hanged, a cheap pleasure, which the Hayes family never denied themselves. And they returned home with a good appetite to breakfast, braced by the walk, and tickled into hunger, as it were, by the spectacle. I can recollect, when I was a gyp at Cambridge, that the N used to have breakfast parties for the very same purpose, and the exhibition of the morning acted infallibly upon the stomach, and caused the young students to eat with much voracity. Well, Mrs. Catherine, a handsome, well-dressed, plump, rosy woman of 34, and when, my dear, is a woman handsomer than at that age? Comma came in quite merrily from her walk, and entered the back parlor, which looked into a pleasant yard, or garden, whereon the sun was shining very gaily, and where, at a table covered with a nice white cloth, laid out with some silver mugs too, and knives, all with different crests and patterns, sat an old gentleman reading in an old book. "Here we are at last, doctor," said Mrs. Hayes, "and here's his speech." She produced the little halfpenny tract, which to this day, is sold at the gallows foot upon the death of every offender. "I've seen a many men turned off, to be sure, but I never did see one who bore it more like a man than he did." "My dear," said the gentleman addressed as doctor, "he was as cool, and as brave as steel, and no more minded hanging than tooth drawing." "It was the drink that ruined him," said Mrs. Cat. "Drink, and bad company. I warned him, my dear, I warned him years ago. And directly he got into Wilde's gang, I knew that he had not a year to run. Ah, why, my love, will men continue such dangerous courses?" continued the doctor, with a sigh, "and jeopardy their lives for a miserable watch or a snuff-box, of which Mr. Wilde takes 3/4 of the produce. But here comes the breakfast, and, egad, I am as hungry as a lad of 20. Indeed, at this moment Mrs. Hayes's servant appeared with a smoking dish of bacon and greens, and Mr. Hayes himself ascended from the cellar of which he kept the key, bearing with him a tolerably large jug of small beer. To this repast the doctor, Mrs. Springett, the other lodger, and Mrs. Hayes, proceeded with great alacrity. A fifth cover was laid, but not used, the company remarking that Tom had very likely found some acquaintances at Tyburn, with whom he might choose to pass the morning. Tom was Master Thomas Billings, now of the age of 16. Slim, smart, 5 feet 10 inches in height, handsome, sallow in complexion, black-eyed and black-haired. Mr. Billings was apprenticed to a tailor, of tolerable practice, who was to take him into partnership at the end of his term. It was supposed, and with reason, that Tom would not fail to make a fortune in this business, of which the present head was one Bankleader, a German. Bankleader was skillful in his trade after the manner of his nation, which in breeches and metaphysics in inexpressibles and incomprehensibles may instruct all Europe, but too fond of his pleasure. Some promissory notes of his had found their way into Hayes's hands, and had given him the means, not only of providing Master Billings with a cheap apprenticeship, and a cheap partnership afterwards, but would empower him, in 1 or 2 years after the young partner had joined the firm, to eject the old one altogether. So that there was every prospect that, when Mr. Billings was 21 years of age, poor Bankleader would have to act, not as his master, but as journeyman. Tom was a very precocious youth, was supplied by a doting mother with plenty of pocket money, and spent it with a number of lively companions of both sexes, at plays, bull baitings, fairs, jolly parties on the river, and such like innocent amusements. He could throw a main too, as well as his elders, had pinked his man, in a row at Madam King's in the piazza, and was much respected at the roundhouse. Mr. Hayes was not very fond of this promising young gentleman. Indeed, he had the baseness to bear malice, because, in a quarrel which occurred about 2 years previously, he, Hayes, being desirous to chastise Mr. Billings, had found himself, not only quite incompetent, but actually at the mercy of the boy, who struck him over the head with a joint stool, felled him to the ground, and swore he would have his life. The doctor, who was then also a lodger at Mr. Hayes's, interposed, and restored the combatants, not to friendship, but to peace. Hayes never afterwards attempted to lift his hand to the young man, but contented himself with hating him profoundly. In this sentiment, Mr. Billings participated cordially, and, quite unlike Mr. Hayes, who never dared to show his dislike, used on every occasion when they met, by actions, looks, words, sneers, and curses, to let his stepfather know the opinion which he had of him. Why did not Hayes discard the boy altogether? Because, if he did so, he was really afraid of his life, and because he trembled before Mrs. Hayes, his lady, as the leaf trembles before the tempest in October. His breath was not his own, but hers. His money, too, had been chiefly of her getting, for though he was as stingy and mean as mortal man can be, and so likely to save much, he had not the genius for getting which Mrs. Hayes possessed. She kept his books, for as he had learned to read and write by this time, she made his bargains, and she directed the operations of the poor-spirited little capitalist. When bills became due, and debtors pressed for time, then she brought Hayes's own professional merits into play. The man was as deaf, and cold as a rock. Never did poor tradesmen gain a penny from him. Never were the bailiffs delayed one single minute from their prey. The Bankleader business, for instance, showed pretty well the genius of the two. Hayes was for closing with him at once. But his wife saw the vast profits which might be drawn out of him, and arranged the apprenticeship and the partnership before alluded to. The woman heartily scorned and spit upon her husband, who fawned upon her like a spaniel. She loved good cheer. She did not want for a certain kind of generosity. The only feeling that Hayes had for anyone except himself was for his wife, whom he held in a cowardly awe and attachment. He liked drink too, which made him chirping and merry, and accepted willingly any treats that his acquaintances might offer him. But he would suffer agonies when his wife brought her ordered from the cellar a bottle of wine. And now for the doctor. He was about 70 years of age. He had been much abroad. He was of a sober, cheerful aspect. He dressed handsomely and quietly in a broad hat and cassock, but saw no company except the few friends whom he met at the coffee house. He had an income of about £100, which he promised to leave to young Billings. He was amused with the lad, and fond of his mother, and had boarded with them for some years past. The doctor, in fact, was our old friend Corporal Brock, the Reverend Dr. Wood now, as he had been Major Wood 15 years back. Anyone who has read the former part of this history must have seen that we have spoken throughout with invariable respect of Mr. Brock, and that in every circumstance in which he has appeared, he has acted, not only with prudence, but often with genius. The early obstacle to Mr. Brock's success was want of conduct simply. Drink, women, play, how many a brave fellow have they ruined, had pulled Brock down as often as his merit had carried him up. When a man's passion for play has brought him to be a scoundrel, it at once ceases to be hurtful to him in a worldly point of view. He cheats, and wins. It is only for the idle and luxurious that women retain their fascinations to a very late period, and Brock's passions had been whipped out of him in Virginia, where much ill health, ill treatment, hard labor, and hard food speedily put an end to them. He forgot there even how to drink. Rum or wine made this poor declining gentleman so ill that he could indulge in them no longer, and so his three vices were cured. Had he been ambitious, there is little doubt but that Mr. Brock, on his return from transportation, might have risen in the world, but he was old and a philosopher. He did not care about rising. Living was cheaper in those days, and interest for money higher. When he had amassed about £600, he purchased an annuity of £72, and gave out, why should he not, that he had the capital as well as the interest. After leaving the Hayes family in the country, he found them again in London. He took up his abode with them, and was attached to the mother and the son. Do you suppose that rascals have not affections like other people? Hearts, Madame A, hearts and family ties which they cherish? As the doctor lived on with this charming family, he began to regret that he had sunk all his money in annuities, and could not, as he repeatedly vowed he would, leave his savings to his adopted children. He felt an indescribable pleasure, u of mari magno, etc., in watching the storms and tempests of the Hayes menage. He used to encourage Mrs. Catherine into anger when, happily, that lady's fits of calm would last too long. He used to warm up the disputes between wife and husband, mother and son, and enjoy them beyond expression. They served him for daily amusement, and he used to laugh until the tears ran down his venerable cheeks at the accounts which young Tom continually brought him of his pranks abroad, among watchmen and constables, at taverns or elsewhere. When, therefore, as the party were discussing their bacon and cabbage, before which the Reverend Doctor with much gravity said grace, Master Tom entered. Dr. Wood, who had before been rather gloomy, immediately brightened up, and made a place for Billings between himself and Mrs. Catherine. How do, old cock? Said that young gentleman familiarly. How goes it, mother? And so saying, he seized eagerly upon the jug of beer which Mr. Hayes had drawn, and from which the latter was about to help himself, and poured down his throat exactly one quart. Ah! Said Mr. Billings, drawing breath after a draught which he had learned accurately, to gauge from the habit of drinking out of pewter measures which held precisely that quantity. Ah! Said Mr. Billings, drawing breath, and wiping his mouth with his sleeves. This is very thin stuff, old Squaretto's, but my coppers have been red hot since last night, and they wanted a sluicing. Should you like some ale, dear? Said Mrs. Hayes, that fond and judicious parent. A quart of brandy, Tom? Said Dr. Wood. Our papa will run down to the cellar for it in a minute. I'll see him hanged first, cried Mr. Hayes, quite frightened. Oh, fie now, you unnatural father, said the doctor. The very name of father used to put Mr. Hayes in a fury. I'm not his father, thank heaven, said he. No, nor nobody else's, said Tom. Mr. Hayes only muttered a spawn brat. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.